and fresh.
The Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, the traditional owners of the land the upcoming game is played on, and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging.
Welcome to the 2021 AFL Premiership season on AFL Nation.
Curls it into the pocket. Cameron wants it. Cameron gets it.
The Silwood standing start. Lash the ball toward the goal. Oh, that's a moment of inspiration from the skipper.
Charlie comes up brandishing. He doubles back from left to right and kicks one of the goals of the season.
50 from goal. Kept it alive. 48 from goal. Goes with the banana. It'll be the miracle. Oh,
to AFL Nation.
For a good few years, Richmond has been the testing material. If you had any pretension to the throne, you have to stack up against the Tigers. So far in 2021, Port Adelaide and Melbourne have taken their turn and prevailed. And now the last of the hot three, the Western Bulldogs, put their credentials up. And one of the most intriguing aspects is just how heavily favoured they are on Friday night to win their way through. It's the Bulldogs and the Tigers at the MCG to begin round seven on AFL Nation. Jared Waitley with you and Anthony Hudson is with me. Hello, hello.
Hello, Jared. What a magnificent night it is for football. Walk through the gardens here to come into the ground. Nearly got run over by the G train, which was not Fraser Gehrig, but it's a little train that goes around to move people into the ground if you need a bit of help. But it's just a special night for football. I hope we get a special game to go with it. Oh, that weight of expectation on the Bulldogs. How is that going to affect them tonight? I'd love to get inside the mind of the players with our experts tonight, but can't wait. Certainly around town today, talking to a few Bulldogs fans, they're a little bit nervous and a little bit tired about that prospect.
The last day of April has been absolutely glorious, as you alluded to, the perfect day for either surfing or golf. Jared Healy, good evening.
Good evening. I'd like to do both, but unfortunately I was only able to do one today, but very happy to do that. Jordan Lewis is the golfer amongst us now. Louis, as a retired player, you come along and you think, oh, gee, if only. When a day like today, in about 4 weeks' time, it'll be snowing and sleeting, you think, oh, this is nice out here. But on days like today, gee, wouldn't it be fantastic to be able to run out and play in conditions like this?
Not only the weather, but the teams, the enormity of the game. These are the games, as a player, that you love to play in, and the weather was just spot on as I was driving in and then parking, then walking through the, like a little bit what you did, Hutto, walking through the garden, getting a sense of what the game feels like from outside. Whenever there was a big game and I was lucky enough to play it, I'd always drive around the MCG just to see the people lining up, the people coming in their colours.
Did you wind the window down so they all saw you as well?
No, didn't do any of that. It was, yeah, you get a sense of the occasion if you walked here tonight, unlike Jared Waitley might have parked underneath Jared. So a fantastic match. Richmond have been the benchmark for the last 3 years. Melbourne withstood the test last week. Now it's Western Bulldogs' turn.
Isn't it unusual, though, Jared, that...
We've just lost Jared there. Yes.
Isn't it unusual, Jared, that we have two clubs who have got plenty to prove tonight? I mean, Richmond are the undisputed kings, and yet they need to prove that they are still the Kings, and the Western Bulldogs have got five or six in a row, looking for seven in a row, almost unheard of in this era. And yet, to frank what they've done already this season, this is the one they need to nail. So that's why there's so much riding on it for both groups.
And for Richmond, sorry, Hutto, Richmond, they would have heard the doubters out there question, are they dropping off? No Martin, no Lambert. How are they going to perform tonight? So they come into this game, funnily enough, wanting to prove a point as well, that they're still the best side in the competition. And no matter who you are, how good your form is, when you come up against us, you've got to play your best footy.
And somehow that has worked to Richmond's favour in previous years. They've got to this point of the season. I remember a few years ago they had one without Dusty in Adelaide, and they may not have even won it. I can't remember. There was a number of different ones along the way, but they were able to still perform really well and it start to turn their season around. So, you know, coming into this year, we sort of expected that with what happened last year, that maybe it would be a refresh year for Richmond and they could get on a juggernaut, but that hasn't been the way it's turned out. It feels like they're not going to just pull the same trick as they have every other year, are they?
No, but you need, I think if you've been at the top of your game for 3 or 4 years like Richmond have, you need little things of motivation throughout the season. So one, it might be you might get someone external to come and talk to the playing group. It's just a different voice. You might get other things that happen. But one of the things that you look for as a player is big games against good opposition that just stirs up that emotion inside you that go, OK, you're coming for us? You better be at your best.
And the two sides have got very different traits to their performance that actually are going to be tested. The Bulldogs, they concede the least amount of inside 50s and protect what could be a bit fragile, their one-on-one defence. And yet the Tigers penetrate the forward 50 the most, around 60 times. So these are little intrinsic, match on man on man and team on team intricacies, I think, are going to be tested today.
Did Melbourne give the rest of the comp? We've been waiting for 5 years for some team to show us how to beat Richmond. Did Melbourne show us last week or not?
Well, they beat them in a different way. So you look at the Sydney game. Sydney beat them through, a ball in motion type of game, kicking, using the angles, really trying to draw their defence up. Whereas Melbourne was pressure, chaining out of stoppages, keeping your defence stable. So the high half forwards of the Richmond Football Club love to get up the ground, drag their defenders up so they can race you back to goals. Whereas Melbourne kept a really deep defender. Quite often you'd see Richmond snap at goal and there'd be a Melbourne player nearly right on the line taking a mark and stopping them from scoring. So the difference is that Western Bulldogs will back themselves defensively. They're quite aggressive in the way that they set up. The reason why that works in Richmond's favour is Richmond like to chain out of stoppages and chain out of the middle of the ground. So what do Bulldogs do? Do their defenders get sucked up the ground trying to put on some frontal pressure, or do they hold their defence like Melbourne did last week and did so well?
We know Dusty's out, but Dunkley's out, and we've all kind of glossed over it, I felt, this week and said, oh, well, they've got such a deep midfield. Is he a big loss or not?
Oh, I think so. I think he just adds depth to that midfield and allows other players to play their specific role. So he's a massive out. English is another big out. He was, another key position down in their forward line that provided a really good contest and a break for Martin in the ruck. So you do get comfortable with the players around you. So it's not necessarily the player playing his role, but it's McRae looking to his left, Liberatore looking to his right. And then just seeing Dunkley there, it's just, they're in sync at the moment. So one of those players goes out, then they have to fill that void and look for different options.
And would you have done Jamara or not?
Well, they know Jamara best. I mean, he came off a 4 or 5 goal game last week, and now it's very hard to gauge on VFL form, I think, at the moment, how strong that competition is. We saw the game last night that it wasn't strong at all. So it's how much you read into that. But they'll bide their time, and we know Luke Beveridge is going to be very patient with Jamara. This would have been an ideal occasion for us to watch him come out on the big stage and go against the yardstick of the competition, but it may not be.
I think one of the reasons holding Jamara back would be the ruck. If you look at no English, then I think you'll see a combination of Bruce and Shacky go into the ruck. I doubt whether Martin will go to the forward line. I think he'll come off the ground.
Yep.
Shacky and Bruce will probably interchange. And Jamara's not ready for that role at the present time. So maybe he needs English to come back before he gets an opportunity in that forward line.
But it would have been a good night to bring him in, because if he wasn't going into the ruck, you've still got 3 key forwards down there that he would arguably take the 4th best defender, which would be a nice little matchup for him. So we've seen what West Coast have done with Oscar Allen. It may have been a good night to really test them in the air.
Speaking of defenders, Noah Bolter, probably just a shade off at the present time, gets an opportunity to have another crack at Aaron Norton. Last time they played, Aaron Norton took 13, I think, to use your favourite number, Hutto. Contested marks, and it was the game where he really, I think, alerted the whole competition just to how.
That was a couple of years ago.
Good he is. Yeah, a couple of years ago. So he gets another opportunity.
Is anyone surprised how heavily favoured the Dogs are? They are primed for the challenge.
Yeah, 250 to 150. Dusty, Prestia, and Lambert out of the middle. Yeah. It's a big loss. Cochin's down on form. So
thinner looking midfield, isn't it, for Richmond?
It's a very different looking midfield, and it's a different looking forward line because Dusty's not there.
Mm.
So do they? do they go along the lines of when Dangerfield was out with Geelong, they went with a tagger? So do we see Richmond apply that type of midfield pressure tonight? I still think the upside with Richmond is huge. You know, there are multiple players across the field who are down on form. They come back to the MCG with a massive crowd against a side that is heavily favoured. That this is a prime game for Richmond to sit back and go, a lot of the talk hasn't been with us. We understand that Martin's gone overseas, so there's a little bit of conversation around it, but our performance has been questioned. But also that the media coming out about Western Bulldogs is all positive. How well are they going? This is an ideal situation to be if you're Richmond.
And you don't want to lose to all three of the contenders as they're being shaped up. And then they would play, they play Geelong next week, so they might get a look in quick succession at the contenders. You don't want to drop the whole suite of them.
No, so that's the other side of the coin, isn't it? When you've been at the top of your game for a period of time, then those losses to good sides start to just creep into your mind and create a little bit of doubt. So this game is huge for Richmond also.
Are we actually seeing anything in Richmond that makes you concerned?
Oh, I think if there's a vulnerability in their game at the moment, it's their defence. It's their ability to defend 1v1 and win those contests is where they're vulnerable. I think their forward pressure can be better. Their small forwards in Rioli and Arts, Castagna, their forward pressure has been pretty much non-existent, which has been the hallmark of their game. Get the ball in their forward half and really lock it in there and just pressure the hell out of you. So that would be an issue. And then also what Jared touched on before, just their inside 50 entries, the polish that they've lacked. So there's huge upside to the way they're playing.
So their defence has got a couple of players out of it, and we're going to be talking to one of them down the track. But I think what's really interesting is the point, I think it was you, Hutto, raised, and that is, did Melbourne give us an insight into unwinding Richmond's famous zone defence? And you only have to go back, you know, a decade or maybe a little bit longer now, when Neil Craig was virtually given the Premiership Cup at about round 10 because he was the first guy to institute the flooded defence. And at halftime in the prelim final, when the West Coast Eagles couldn't get through, they changed their mindset, and they said, let's handball, and let's handball forward. It's amazing how history is repeating itself, where Melbourne did exactly the same to this much vaunted defence, albeit minus one or two players. But to implement the handball game so particularly well in the front half was incredible to watch, and they executed really well. And now we've got a side that has built their game around handball, having another crack at it. So it'll be interesting to see what Richmond have learned from last week.
Yeah, so that's a really good point. Whether you can, in a week, can you reshape the way you know, the other team you defend, I guess? Mm. Or do you just trust your system to execute it better?
Oh, I think you're not going to change dramatically in a week.
But you might have to tinker a bit, might
you? Yeah, well, absolutely. Or you might need to review it and sharpen up certain areas. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But I think when you're looking at the Melbourne game and the way that they were able to break down their midfield pressure from Richmond, the first 15 minutes was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was.
But then it dropped off. So when you haven't got midfield pressure and the ball's coming in at sort of all different angles, it's very hard for the defence to get set. That's when Richmond play their best. I mean, we'll speak to Vlosten tonight, but he's been a huge out, that zone off defender, but also from a counter-attack point of view, he's been a loss. But I reckon if there's one area that Richmond are vulnerable, it's when the ball comes to ground in their defensive 50.
And I think we've now seen them vulnerable twice, whether it be through the Swans kicking or the handball. They're zoning, they love a zone off. And I think the whole competition is learning that you don't long bomb the ball to the Tigers because they're well set behind it.
Only taken 4 or 5 years to work that out.
But they've also forced people into doing it with their incredible midfield pressure. And that pressure is what probably is the first thing to go with multiple premiership groups.
We're going to touch base with both camps as we build up to the game. And our pre-game show for Beaumont Tiles, choose Beaumont's. Only Beaumont Tiles have complete bathroom packages and for hard yakka. The week's predominant topic has been Collingwood, who fell to 1-5 on Anzac Day, 17th on the ladder. And then just an intriguing layer upon layer where, Jared, with you, the chief executive said, no, we don't know Bucks' intentions. We're waiting to the back part of the year. And then the very next day, Nathan Buckley said, no, I want to coach. Yep. I absolutely want to be here.
Yeah, I found that an interesting interview because when I asked him the question, does Bucks want to coach, I thought he answered me in good faith, yes, he does want to coach. Well, to me, I wasn't asking, does he want to coach next week? I was asking, does he want to coach long term? And Scoot McClure came over the top and nailed him on it. And it turned out that he hadn't given some confirmation as to next year. So it was interesting that the next day he clarified it. And why that happened, who nudged Bucks or Bucks nudged himself, is another question in this intriguing scenario that we have yet unanswered.
So for weeks, Buckley has artfully avoided committing himself, yeah, and then he chose to commit. He desperately wanted to say it in that press conference and did. So clearly there's a lack of alignment at Collingwood, and then you can sort of dig through your layers as to whether you think that's lasting or misunderstanding or... But if ever I've seen a case where a new president needs to get his people in a room together and sort out both their direction and their stories, it's this.
Yeah, it's right. Now, I think typically the job of the president, you're probably not in direct contact with the coach all the time. It's probably more the CEO or the head of football. But certainly when they're such a public club and they're under the amount of pressure that they're under right now, it is all about messaging and being on the right page and seeing where everybody's at. And you could sense the frustration, I suppose, in Buckley's press conference the other day. He's been asked this question every single week. And then he just probably thought enough was enough. I need to declare my intentions. I want to coach right now. I want to coach next year. So the ball is in their court.
Why do you think, Jordan, he is elected not to? I think everybody has seen the vision and the audio of Robbo asking whether he was desperate to coach, and he elected not to answer that by saying, no, he's not desperate to coach, which then left the question, well, do you want to coach? But he avoided, as you said, artfully avoided that answer. Why do you think he has avoided saying, yes, I want to nail myself to the Pies next year?
Well, because he probably realises that the media will grab a hold of that and use it in a way that, okay, now Bucks is committed to the Collingwood Football Club. Now, Collingwood, what are you going to do about it? So he's probably trying to avoid that question in that sense to create more pressure to make a decision quicker.
But as their CEO said, I mean, they've all sat down before the start of the season and said, we're going to decide this later on in the year. And I think that's a pretty reasonable position to be in. I mean, Lee Matthews is really strong that if you've been around a club for 5 or 6 years, you should only get one-year terms. And Bucks has been there for 10 years and, you know, talking about doing a 2 or 3 deal extension. But you can see why clubs don't like coaches falling into or falling out of contract, because the discussion becomes distracting.
And they've been through all of that before, haven't they? As was brought up in the press conference post-match, where he admitted then that it did affect the team. So now he goes, oh, well, that was, it's best left then. But, hey, Nathan, this is the same situation you're facing again. What do they need to know now? I mean, he's coached for 10 years. They know how he coaches. So what can they learn over the next... Is it about Nathan or is it about the group, or how Nathan... the level of engagement between the group and Nathan?
I think it's about Nathan, because I think the group is going to go through a transition over the next 2 or 3 years. They've already started. They've got 10 kids under 30 games or thereabouts. In the next one or two years... going to lose Sidebottom and going to lose their skipper, who's been an amazing player for them. And there's a couple of others going to fall out as well, like Roughhead from fullback, etc. So there's going to be a few holes. But, I mean, the question is, is Bucks in Bucks's own mind, is he right for a 3-year term to rebuild this group? And I think that's the major issue in play. And do they want to marry themselves to a bloke who's been there for 10 years without the ultimate success?
I think... what they know and understand about Nathan Buckley right now, they won't learn anything new. He's not going to change the way he coaches. He's not going to change dramatically the way that he deals with the players inside the club. He is who he is. Now, if they decide to sign him up as coach, I think it's important to surround him with really good assistants, because that's probably where the change comes. From the coaches that I've seen over the past, a coach can only take a group so far. Now, if you surround them with other people who have different ideas, and it's up to the coach to accept those ideas and implement them, but assistant coaches can have great power on the performance of a side.
I think what we've seen with Collingwood, Jared, is just how important it is for everybody to be on the one page. And you'd like the coach to be ticking off on some big decisions, like recruiting decisions in particular, that can impact. I mean, giving away two first-round draft picks for a 30-year-old coming into your club when you're on the cusp of a flag, but it compromises your future. That one didn't turn out well. Do we sign up a ruckman for 7 years? Do we compromise our integrity in some respects in having to let Treloar go, given that we've embraced him as a son and he loves us as a family, and that all was a bit messy, and it's impossible to know how much Bucks was involved in all of that, and yet as the coach, he seems to have to wear the lot.
But it's hard to come back from, isn't it? When you've had players leave your club, and now you watch the way they play, you go, wow! Imagine if Treloar was back in our side. Imagine if Stevenson was back in the side. So it's so hard to come back from those decisions as a football club when there's been no change.
If you're looking for a positive, though, I still see energy in the group. And I thought they played really well against the Bombers. They didn't get across the line. They fell apart a little bit in the last quarter. But, gee, you can't say that they're not playing for the coach. And I think if that happened, well, then it's a different story. But right now, if you're a Collingwood supporter, I'm seeing a group that's getting out there, and the coach looks like he's and the playing group look like they're getting on harmoniously.
So when, in projections, when do they return to contention? So I think this is a big part of it. So they're going to miss the finals in 21, and then if Graham Wright runs his projections, and this was what he's been brought in to do, to figure their list out, is if there is a period of redevelopment or rebuild, call it whatever you like, are they planning to miss finals 22, 23 to set themselves up for the next assault?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think they'll threaten in the next 3 to 4 years, to be perfectly honest. I think it would be more 24, 25 when you can assemble young talent. And we heard from David King this week that they haven't got much at the draft this year. They'll get Dacos, you would think, but there's not much else other than that. So it will be a year that was missed, and then another 2 or 3 years to get young, highly rated talent in. Then you've got to develop these kids. So then it's another 2 years on top of that. If you want sustained success, you've got to build it the right way. If you want immediate success, and that might not be premierships, that might be just to play finals to appease everyone, it's not sustainable. So for me, it's a fair 3 to 5 years rebuild.
Do they, in Collingwood making their decision, do they need to consider what's out there, or is it purely decide whether they want Nathan first?
I think whenever you're re-signing a coach, you've got to look at what's out there, but to suggest that there's a lot out there that's better than a 10-year coach, Nathan Buckley, who's 15 seconds away from a flag and a preliminary final and a very close prelim final, would suggest there's going to have to be someone really good. But, I mean, the point, I think, which is still to be absolutely nailed, and it's a combination of Buck saying he wants to coach and what you're saying, Jaron, that is, how long before they contend? Now, Bucks may want to coach next year, but does he want to see, has he got 5 more years left in him? Because if he hasn't got 5 more years left in him, well, then that's the question he has to ask. Not do you want to coach next year? Are you keen to coach next year? It's, can you see this through for another 3 to 5 years? Because that's the Nathan Buckley we need.
Jared Healy and Jordan Lewis, our experts tonight for car sales, unique insights and exclusive perks with car sales for owners. At the other issue Collingwood have been deep in is thwarting Port Adelaide's efforts to return the prison bars. This is an issue as you're either sort of invested in it and rattling the phones, or you're a bit, oh my God. And Jared, I really enjoyed your take on this and why this actually matters, particularly if you're a fan who glazes over at the thought of it.
Well, I tend to glaze over at the thought of it, but I also understand why it's so important. And I think it might also be really important for both presidents, because Mark Corder needs something to unite his group, and what better to unite your group than your club and your jumper. And certainly Koshy, whilst he doesn't need anything to unite them at the moment, they're going particularly well. They fell out a couple of years ago with their supporter base, with the captaincy and the vice and the dual captains, even if you go further back, there was a little bit of acrimony between the old Port and the new Port, etc. So I think Koshy's doing a great job bringing that back together, and I think Mark Corder could be a little bit more vocal on this. Maybe we'll hear it tonight if it's Collingwood's home game and he gets the presidential microphone for the first time. But the one great thing we've got about our clubs is their colours, and we haven't bastardised to a large extent the club jumpers through, you know, away strips, you know, with a white and a red, and in the grandstand you got yellow and a black, and in that grandstand over there you've got the colours of Hawthorn, and yet they're